You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and children of all ages, to the Roper Report. As always, I am your host, Billy Roper, exclusively on Radio Aryan for the Shieldwall Network. And this is the Roper Report broadcast for the first week of March 2018. We've got a lot to talk about. As always, spring has sprung, and next week will be time to spring forward. Flip your clocks one more hour into the future. But for today, this next hour will be all about the present and the past. Now, how did we get here? How did we arrive in 2018 when so many people are still stuck in the alt-right and the rest of us are having to drag them kicking and screaming into that glorious future where we can all hail the new dawn? It's because we're constantly being opposed by the other side of the Hegelian dialectic that Marx made into materialism, the counter-argument to our rational, organic, nature-based truths of white ethnostate inevitability. I'm talking, of course, about our eternal enemies and God's eternal enemies, the eternal Jews, and representing the eternal Jews in the blue for the Star of David corner is the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, which means the Brotherhood of Circumcised, founded to defend murderer and rapist Leo Frank, a Jewish factory owner who murdered and raped poor little Mary Fagan about 100 years ago. They've not gotten any nicer since, folks. So the ADL is working with the SPLC under contract for YouTube and Google and Facebook to try to identify us, alt-right and white nationalists, especially on YouTube, where they've been able over the last weekend to remove 32 of my podcast and rally videos from the Billy Roper YouTube channel. Now, you can still go to YouTube and type in YouTube/Billy Roper to access the Billy Roper YouTube channel, or you can just type in my name. But of the 128 that were an hour ago still up, I can't guarantee how many will be left. I can't guarantee that they'll remain. We are under attack from all sides by the forces who know that they have to shut us up. They have to silence us before they can kill us. And they're using censorship as their tool to silence us. And the Billy Roper YouTube channel is just one of its many victims. But I encourage you to go check out the podcast and the rally videos. They're still there on my YouTube channel to watch and listen to them. And keep in mind that it's not just videos that they're removing and not just Twitter profiles that they're having taken down or Facebook profiles that they're having deleted. They're actually going after all of our social and cultural institutions. And they're doing this as they wring their hands and kvetch and moan as if they were the victims. You know, it's a cliche, but it's true that the Jew calls out in pain when he hits you. And, you know, they say that nobody suffered like they've suffered, and for no reason, over and over again. But they are the true autocrats, the true oppressors who work to undermine and destroy everything precious and wholesome and natural and good and holy, so that they can then destroy the white race, which produces everything they despise and are envious of. They actually keep playing the victim card over and over again until, you know, a lot of people are not affected by it anymore. The curse has come off of it, and it's worn pretty smooth. Just last week, the ADL put out a new report that said that anti-Semitic attacks, these are a very broad measure of the term attacks, but anti-Semitic attacks were up 57% in the United States over the last year. Now, that includes harassment. Now, if they actually count every time that a Jew is harassed, in other words, any time that a goy should talk back to a Jew, any time that a goy should argue with a Jew or call out a Jew for being a Jew or for being Jewy as harassment, then they probably need to have more fingers and toes because they're not counting enough of them. They say that there's 1,900 incidents, and this includes, you know, people arguing with a Jew and calling a Jew, which is the worst thing that you can possibly call a Jew, is a Jew. It's the worst insult in the world for a Jew, just to call him a Jew. Try it sometimes. You can see how they explode. I don't get upset when somebody calls me a redneck or a cracker, but Jews really hate being called Jews, and they know it's an insult. So they really respond really, really, really full of vitriol for it, because they know that it's the worst possible thing you can be called, because it is removing their mask and exposing them. That's the last thing they want to happen. So 1,900 incidents over the last year, according to the ADL, of Jews being attacked in anti-Semitic ways, and that's everything from Molotov cocktails to verbal harassment or even typing at them on the internet, on social media. And I guess that probably includes, you know, all the threats of the bombings that it turned out, remember, were actually committed by an Israeli Jew who got caught with all those phone calls. So each of those phone calls he made from Tel Aviv threatening Jewish places with bombs, I guess, counted as one of those individual 1,900 incidents. But, you know, they really, really are not keeping up, because, hell, I bet I beat that by myself every single day before coffee. I think I rack up more than 1,900 all by myself in a 24-hour period. But, you know, these New York Times reports, you know, that counts all these anti-Semitic attacks, they don't really mention how many of them are Jewish lightning or how many of them, like I said, are by Jews against other Jews, and how many of them are just really fake hate crimes, you know, like the famous meme, "What you doing, Rabbi?" Right? So the ADL is being the policeman, along with the SPLC, of the internet and social media. And they've taken a couple swipes and removed about 34 of the podcast and videos from the Roper Report website. But you can go to the original YouTube channel for the Roper Report, and that's YouTube.com/C/Billy Roper to see the 120 or so which still remain and may still be there by the time you click to it. Now, when we talk about censorship, we talk about trying to silence us and trying to deny us our First Amendment rights and our Second Amendment rights and our right to peaceably assemble together, it also includes the Jews and their Shabbos Goy allies trying to deny white people public venues and places to meet. What that actually leads to is trying to shut down meetings, trying to keep Richard Spencer, for example, from having a place to get together in Detroit. And there were four different venues that Spencer and his think tank actually reserved for the conference that they're having this weekend up in Detroit. Apparently, all of them have been canceled because of pressure from the Jews and their anti-white allies, calling places and threatening places, calling the police and threatening the police, so the police then call the places and tell the places that they should shut it down because there might be a bomb threat or a terrorist attack or some kind of protest outside. And that's how the right to peaceably assemble is denied to people. Because this is the way that Jews operate. They never stand toe-to-toe with you. They will never fight you face-to-face. They always will sneak around and try to stab you in the back and try to censor you and silence you and to deplatform you and to take away your right to peaceably assemble by having venues denied to you. That's what Jews do. One of the unfortunate consequences of the Jews and the Detroit Free Press attacking Spencer's conference was that Kyle Bristow, Spencer's attorney, had a smear piece written about him in the paper, and it kind of doxed him, but he really had always used his name, and so he had kind of already been doxed. I remember I knew Kyle Bristow, you know, over 10 years ago before he went to law school. I helped him write his book, Salutrian Apocalypse, which was based on my Paleo-American ethnic diversity theory that, you know, whites were in North America first before the Mongoloids got lost and stumbled across the Bering Strait. And the Salutrian theory, which actually supports that based on anthropological and archaeological evidence. If you want to read more, you can get my book, Paleo-American Ethnic Diversity, which actually served as my master's thesis off of Amazon.com. But, you know, I knew Kyle back when he was a student and was much more radical in terms of his rhetoric at least, than he is today. But he kind of, you know, apologized, kind of did a crawfish, and said that he regretted some of his earlier, more politically incorrect statements. And now that he was doxxed in this Detroit Free Press article, says that he thinks of himself as a civil libertarian. And so I don't know if that's a tactic. I hope that it is, and I hope that Kyle is not truly cucking. He's a brilliant guy and a skilled attorney who's done a lot of good work for the movement. And so I'm not going to be too hasty to be critical of him. I will just wait and see how things turn out. But that is one of the after effects of the conference of Spencer's being basically shut down. And, you know, Matt Heimbach was going to be a speaker there as well as Cameron Padgett. And I think that Eli Mosley was going to, but I'm not sure if he was disinvited because Spencer did kind of disavow him pretty quickly after it came out that, you know, Mosley, Elliot Klein, had actually done the whole, you know, stolen valor thing about his military record. But I guess he was disinvited, and it was just going to be Spencer and Cameron Padgett, and then Heimbach. And then last week, I was invited to attend as well. And I declined, and I gave very specific and thorough reasons why I was not interested in going. And it was partially because at first there was a rumor going around that Mike Enoch Pinovich was going to be included, and I had no desire to be in the same room with him. So I was going to deny based on that, and that turned out to be a rumor, even though, you know, Spencer does a lot of stuff with Enoch Pinovich. But I didn't want to do it because actually I have too much ideological difference and character difference with Richard Spencer as well, and I was very specific about that. Anyone who wants to know what my problems are with Spencer, aside from his Asian girl fetish and his defense of homosexuals and homosexuality, and his claim that child porn could be useful in keeping pedophiles from actually physically raping kids, can, I guess, do their own research on the Roper Report website, which you can find at theroperreport.wordpress.net or at whitenationalist.com. And I'll leave that up to you. I won't spend this hour attacking Richard Spencer. I'll just, suffice to say, we have enough differences that I was not interested in accepting the invitation to attend the conference and to speak there. So that's why I am talking with you, dear friends, and recording this on Sunday evening rather than being in Detroit hopping from bar to bar, trying to find a place to talk. And I wish them well, but unfortunately, it seems like it was not a very constructive weekend, mainly because of the Jews in the Shabelskoy and law enforcement trying at every turn to deplatform them and to have these venues removed from their access. Now, we're hopeful that the Shieldwall Network's coming rally, March the 24th, will meet with more success. For one thing, we're not going to ask anyone for permission. We'll give notice, but we're not going to ask for a permit. We're going to show up. We're planning very, very thoroughly. I am very OCD when it comes to rallies and protests and demonstrations and making sure that I dot all my I's and cross all my T's. So the 24th of March, when everywhere across the country, the little lefty kitties and their Antifa allies and BLM are having these March for Our Lives protest against the Second Amendment, including at the U.S. Capitol. We will be countering the Bentonville, Arkansas March for Our Lives anti-gun protest, which is the largest in our state, even though it's about 3.5 hours away from where I live in Northwest Arkansas. And we'll be following up that rally, which is called the Bill of Rights Rally, being planned and organized by the Shieldwall Network and our allies, at the Bentonville Square at noon on March 24th with a flash rally, which will be held at the Walmart corporate headquarters there in Bentonville. Because, as most of my listeners I'm sure have heard, Walmart has joined L.L. Bean and Dick's Sporting Goods and some other retailers like Kroger's through their Fred Meyers in saying that they will no longer sell firearms to those under the age of 21. I guess we can't have selective service draft available anymore either, because it's fine to take a kid straight out of high school, 17 years old, 18 years old, and teach them how to use not only just an M4 with selective fire, an automatic rifle, or a machine gun, or hand grenades, or mortars, and send them to foreign countries and teach them how to kill people with more freedom than we have. And then after they're through with their tour of duty, when they come back home, they still can't walk into a Walmart and buy a shotgun. That's the world that we live in. That's the country that we live in today. It's completely ridiculous. So after we finish with our Bill of Rights rally on March 24th in Bentonville at the Bentonville Square, we're then going to have our own flash protest at the Walmart corporate headquarters offices there in Bentonville. And if you're a white nationalist, you're interested in helping us stand in support of the Bill of Rights and specifically use our First Amendment rights to protect our remaining Second Amendment rights, then I encourage you to join us in Bentonville, Arkansas. If you're not able to travel to Bentonville, Arkansas, then we encourage you to do some digging. Google marchforourlives.org and find their website. And they actually have all of their protest areas around the country on a map and listed city by city, state by state. It's very easy to find where the nearest one to you is. Get some of your friends together, organize a counter protest in your area to let everyone know that there are some people around who still support the Second Amendment and are not willingly going to allow the Jews to disarm whites before the shooting war actually starts like they want to. Because that's really what this is all about. The Jews want to take away as many of our guns as possible and to, by making them illegal, put as many of us in jail as possible before the actual shooting part of the Civil War begins. So we need to make sure we counter that. You know, on April 19th, 1775, remember that law enforcement officials came upon a place where private citizens had stockpiled military-grade rifles, and they attempted to confiscate them. And that first act of gun control actually led to the American Revolution breaking out that day and that time. If you have the opportunity to read Dr. William Pierce's The Turner Diaries, then I encourage you to think about what this coming attempt at gun control could lead to for our people and for our enemies. So March the 24th, find a location near you by going to the marchforourlives.org website, looking at the city list. If you are not able to find friends, if you're not able to find a rally that you can go to near you to counter protest, then you can go to GoFundMe.com and help out with providing some of the fuel and the food and the hotel cost so that other people can actually attend rallies to defend our Second Amendment. Now, on the GoFundMe page, you know, there are a lot of political fundraising platforms, and some of them are ours, and some of them actually belong to our enemies. But on GoFundMe.com, for now at least, the Help Us Defend the Bill of Rights GoFundMe page is still up. And I encourage you to go to GoFundMe.com and look at Help Us Defend the Bill of Rights, sponsored by me, Billy Roper, to find out how you can help support a pro-Second Amendment rally to provide donations that will help with the fuel and the food and the motel rooms for other patriots to be able to attend if you're not able to or if circumstances don't allow. Maybe you have a work schedule conflict or transportation issue, but you could give $10 or $20 to help out others, and they can be your voice. They can stand for you on March 24th, and we certainly appreciate any help that you're able to help them with. Now, that having been said, there are a lot of things that are going on now with gun control efforts, the attempt to disarm us. There are a lot of things that are going on right now with the restriction of gun sales by private corporations and businesses. And like I mentioned, a lot of them are saying that they will no longer sell assault rifles, even though, what does that mean, assault rifle? AR does not stand for assault rifle. It stands for Armalite rifle. There's no such thing as a brand of assault rifle. It's just a scary-looking color. So, you know, black rifle lives matter. It's very racist and discriminatory for them to be opposed to a rifle just because of the way it looks, I think. Very bigoted, very hurtful. You know, my AR-15 identifies as a Nerf gun, and to say that it's not a Nerf gun when it very clearly feels like it's a Nerf gun is racist. So have some sympathy for the feelings of these AR-15s and recognize that they're really not all evil, and it's racist to think that they are just because of the way they look and because of their color. Back in the 1950s, the 1960s, throughout the South, but really throughout the whole country, there were diners and cafes who did not serve blacks. Or if they did, they served blacks in a separate part of the business, and they had to come through a different door and use a different restroom, a different water fountain. They were separated. They were segregated. And this really wasn't a problem for the people locally, whether they were black or they were white. They just had the opportunity to sit in different areas of the cafe. And, you know, the hypocrisy of the left is so rancid that they celebrate this movie Wakanda, you know, Black Panther, and their whole ethnostate of blacks having their own nation with their own government and their own society, celebrating their own culture, and how wonderful it would be for blacks to have their own black ethnostate in the Black Panther movie named Wakanda. And yet at the same time, they preach multiculturalism and multiracialism and how kumbaya, we should all hold hands and get along, and how evil ethnostates are for everyone else. I mean, used to, it was only the Jews that had that kind of chutzpah, that had their own racist state but denied it to anyone else. But I think it's fine for black nationalists to want to have Wakanda in Africa or even, you know, in the southeastern United States, which America balkanizes, but they're actually promoting the idea of an ethnostate with this movie. Now, back in the 1950s, the 1960s, people just wanted to have a cup of coffee and a slice of pie, maybe a hamburger, without, you know, having Kumala, the Ugandan warrior, sitting next to them, sweating all over them. So these segregated diners and cafes had to be destroyed by the federal government. Once they actually passed the Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka ruling, you know, 1954, and then they forcibly integrated schools, beginning at Central High School in Little Rock in 1957 by the 101st Airborne at Bayonet Point, forcing little white girls to go to school with butt niggers at Bayonet Point. That was your government and your armed forces that was used to do that. 101st Airborne, look it up. And so they had to forcibly desegregate these private businesses. And you know, you've seen these signs, I'm sure, in some places that say, "We reserve the right to refuse to provide service to anyone." It obviously does not work. I mean, it really started with the gay movement in a similar fashion. First of all, it was, you know, it doesn't matter what people do in the privacy of their own home. How does it affect you? And then it turns into, you know, bake the cake or go to jail. That was the slippery slope, the entropy that happened. And it was a reflection of what happened in the 50s and 60s when the federal government actually used something economically, financially, called the Interstate Commerce Clause to force civil rights owned to these diners and cafes. And remember that we talked about last week, civil rights are something that the government gives to you and can then limit or take away. Natural rights are something that white people have, according to the Founding Fathers, and no other people. So, non-whites not being eligible for U.S. citizenship, according to the Naturalization Act of 1790 and the intent of our Founding Fathers, who established the government for the purpose, the explicit purpose of securing the blessings of liberty for themselves and their posterity, not the posterity of Asia or Africa or Mexico. They were saying that white people alone have natural rights given to them by God, and civil rights are something completely different, not natural rights, that are given to any featherless biped by the government and can therefore be taken away by the government. And these civil rights given to non-whites were forced on these diners and cafes through the Interstate Commerce Clause, which said that if a single packet of ketchup in any of these diners had crossed the state lines, you know, shipped from Georgia to Tennessee, whatever, then anything that the owners and proprietors of that cafe or diner did could affect interstate commerce. And therefore, it was the federal government's jurisdiction to decide if it was correct or not. Think about that. If you decide in your restaurant or cafe that you want to serve someone or not serve someone, the federal government can say that because, you know, a packet of salt crossed the state line to get to you, anything you do in your private business actually could affect interstate commerce. So they have the right to tell you who you can and cannot sell that packet of salt to and where they can sit to eat it and everything else about how you run your business. Now, by the same token, in a Walmart store, 90% of the product actually comes from China. There's a whole province in China called USA. They spell it USA so that they can put on the box, made in USA. And people think, oh, it's made in America. No, made in USA, not USA. No periods in that. Check it out. But the Chinese products that are sold in Walmart stores cross state lines to get to those Walmart stores. And likewise, even the American-made merchandise sold in a Walmart store crosses state lines to get to those individual Walmart stores. Therefore, if we had a white-controlled federal government, if we had a white-controlled Department of Commerce that wanted to be fair and objective, they could say that anything that Walmart stores do in terms of their store policy or the decisions they make about what to sell to who and what stipulations to place on it, what criteria to limit it to, affected interstate commerce. The federal government could just as easily, as they did in segregating diners and cafes back in the 60s, could just as easily, in today's world, say that Walmart or L.L. Bean or Dick's Sporting Goods cannot refuse to sell a firearm to someone that's 18 or 19 or 20 years old because it's unconstitutional to limit their constitutional rights. And those are natural rights, not civil rights, which a government cannot take away according to the U.S. Constitution. That would be if we had a fair government and we were on an even playing field. That's why I have such a problem with civic nationalists, who say, well, we just need to have equality. We just need to have the same civil rights. We just all need to have the same rights as blacks do, and then we could have our voice. All we're asking for is to be treated fairly. BS. I'm not asking to be treated fairly, the same as a nigger. I have natural rights. A nigger has civil rights. And I recognize the government's not fair. It's not going to be fair until we tear it down and replace it, or it collapses under its own entropy, and then we replace it with ethnostates. But the reality is, this is proof that we are not looking for civil rights. We're not looking for equality and fair treatment. If we had that, we would know it already. We're not going to vote our way back to it. Demography. You really think the Republicans are on your side? How many gun bills are going to have to be passed? How many walls are going to have not been built before you get it through your thick skulls to get off the Trump train? You know, I used to be a Republican. I was a college Republican as an undergrad, so I get it. Okay, I'm not trying to just paint with too broad of a brush here. It's a phase that a lot of us went through. Back in 1992, as a matter of fact, I was a volunteer on Mike Huckabee's U.S. Senate campaign when he first ran for elected office. Many of you are familiar with Mike Huckabee. He ended up being the governor of Arkansas. And there's actually some news about the huckster, as we came to call him, this week. Get to that in a minute. You know, when Huckabee became governor, he really proved how liberal he was. But even before then, you know, he was a Baptist. He's one of those Judeo-Christian Baptists. And he believes the Jews are God's chosen people. He's a reconciliationist. He's a universalist. Back in 1991, I didn't know about it at the time, but Mike Huckabee had given a speech before the Arkansas Baptist Convention, in which he said that because of the collective sins and guilt of whites, we owed it to non-whites, and he was speaking specifically about Hispanics. Because of the collective sin of slavery against blacks, we owed it to Hispanics to be especially welcoming and gracious to make up for our collective sin as whites against blacks. I'm not sure how that works out. I'm not even sure how that would benefit blacks, but that's his whole point. That shows his mindset. Very sick, psychotic, self-loathing that, you know, in medieval times led churchmen like him to become flagellants. You know, they would travel around the country beating themselves on the back with whips and with boards until they bled to do penance for their sin. It happened a lot during the Black Plague, actually. They thought they could beat themselves into immunity from the bubonic plague. Didn't work, by the way. But Mike Huckabee has that kind of flagellant, psychotic, self-loathing, Judeo-Christian mindset, and really always has. And I campaigned for him in 1992 for his U.S. Senate campaign, and then many years later, when I made the front page story on the Arkansas Times newspaper, he was asked about his association with me, because when I was in College Republicans and he came up to give a speech in Russellville, you know, I was there in the headquarters with him and spent a couple of days with him and his daughter. And if you look at where his daughter is today, then you'll see what kind of power the family still has, right? And it turned out that he actually disavowed me in the Arkansas Times newspaper. And the guy who was the leader of the College Republicans at Arkansas Tech University when I was undergrad there at the time, Corey Cox, who is now a leading attorney in Little Rock, became Mike Huckabee's liaison for criminal justice affairs and worked in his Republican gubernatorial administration. Corey gave a completely fictitious quote to the Arkansas Times about me, saying that I had told him in our last communication that Republicans were good and conservative, but that he needed to make his choice because when the white revolution came, that we would shoot them just as quickly as we would Democrats. Now, that's a wild, hyperbolic statement. I can't imagine myself ever having said anything like that at all. But anyway, Corey quoted me allegedly in the Arkansas Times in defense of Huckabee, who said, you know, he used one of those, I cannot recall, statements. He couldn't remember me. but Corey did. And when Mike Huckabee was governor of Arkansas, he and I locked horns a lot. That's not to say that the current governor, Asa Hutchinson, and I have not locked horns either. You know, he and I actually had a long discussion at the Altus Wine Fest when he came back from D.C., when he was in the Department of Homeland Security, and I had a talk with him about what Huckabee was doing at the time. Huckabee wanted to give in-state college tuition rates to illegal immigrants. And, you know, Asa gave me the standard line, which basically indicated that he was going to support what the establishment GOP rhinos told him to do. And I knew exactly where he stood then, but that's nothing new either. You know, the current governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, got his start back in 1986 when he was a new federal prosecutor, and he actually went into the Covenant of the Sword and the Arm of the Lord's Christian Identity Compound in Northwest Arkansas and talked them into surrendering, then broke the deal that he'd made with them and had them prosecuted to the full extent of the law using a actual turncoat prosecution witness named Jim Ellison. And then, you know, recently, as governor, Asa Hutchinson refused to look at the evidence I provided him and the precedential case law, which would have made it possible for him to delay Jacob Goodwin's extradition to Virginia, to face charges in Charlottesville. And he then did everything he could as quickly as possible to spirit Jacob away to Virginia under cover of darkness without any warning to his parents, and refused to meet with them, refused to discuss the case, even though we contacted his office and his media representative and did everything we could to get out to the statewide media and to get coverage of the situation to get Jacob Goodwin's extradition delayed. But Asa Hutchinson did not want to do the moral and courageous right thing. And he's going to go to hell for it. But back to Mike Huckabee. I met Asa to talk about what Mike Huckabee was doing, and Huckabee was basically rhino cucking and trying to give in-state college tuition rates to illegal immigrants and saying that we should work on finding a way to give driver's license to illegal immigrants. And my organization, then White Revolution, held protests and rallies against the Immigrant Workers Freedom Ride, which he gave a pass to, and basically fought him tooth and nail through the entire tenure of his governorship here in Arkansas. And ultimately, I ended up basing a fictional character in my Haste in the Day trilogy, which is about the coming balkanization and breakup of the United States after racial civil war, on Mike Huckabee. And there are some differences in the name, but they're close enough that most people could easily recognize who I was referring to. And I made him into a huckster and a charlatan televangelist preacher who led some of the white renegade factions. But you can read the Haste in the Day trilogy if you have not. And if you have, then you might be able to recognize the character I'm referring to that's based on former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. Now, we live in this clown world. And in this clown world, even people like Mike Huckabee are seen as being conservative. So much so that he stole one of my lines again. I've said many times, you guys have heard me say on this program, that our nation, the United States, was founded to be a white nationalist state by a white nationalist. And I've used the Naturalization Act of 1790 and 1795 consistently. And I've often said, you guys can attest to this, that if leftists, if anti-whites, want to say forthrightly that they hate the principles and ideals of our founding fathers, and if they want to say that they hate the founding principles of the United States forthrightly, then they should just admit so, and then we can let people decide. Mike Huckabee, last week, was named to be on the board of directors of the CMA, the Country Music Association Awards. And there was immediately such an outcry from liberal country music fans. Who would have thunk it? Clown world, liberal country music fans. Now, I'm just as disgusted by this country rap BS as all of you are, and, you know, putting the bass and the thump and the hip hop into country is basically just, I don't care if a wigger's wearing a cowboy hat or a backwards baseball cap, still a wigger. And it disgusts me to see country boys listening to rap, whether it's country rap or nigger rap. Doesn't matter. But the CMA, the Country Music Association, had asked Mike Huckabee to be on their board for the upcoming CMA Awards. And the immediate backlash from liberal country music fans, I guess, I don't know, Natalie Maines maybe from Dixie Chicks, was so strong that he resigned within 24 hours from his position. And as he was going out, he said that if the CMA, the Country Music Association, is really against traditional values, then they should just be forthright and say so, so people could make their own decision. And I thought, beep, 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 still in my line. It's the way I feel every time somebody says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It really, really hurts. It hurts, Herschel. Oy vey. You know? So, Mike Huckabee, still cucking rhino, but still, I guess, far enough to the right in rhetoric and appearance from the left that he's their punching bag. And it's kind of funny to see because I know what he's really like. I know how anti-white he truly is. And the fact that he's suffering for not being far left enough, that's an LOL for me. That's pretty funny. So, when we're talking about the state capitol, I have to be reminded of, in 2011, I led a rally there in Little Rock to stop Boer genocide. And people like, you know, Pastor Thomas Robb showed up as well, and other Christian identity leaders and spokespeople, as well as white nationalist skinheads. We had a news conference there and gave speeches before the crowd of onlookers. And as many of you know, a lot of us have been involved in trying to help the South African people for decades. I remember that the first letter to the editor that I ever wrote was actually to my local hometown newspaper. And a lot of you know, if you've ever listened to or read Dr. William Pierce's Storm Break Loose, American Dissident Voices broadcast, which he created in April of 2000, in April. The Storm Break Loose was American Dissident Voices broadcast that Dr. Pierce recorded. And he was talking about me when I was a school teacher here in Arkansas. And as a high school history teacher, I wrote a letter to the editor, and, you know, he actually read it on the American Dissident Voices broadcast and said some very flattering and complimentary things about it. But that was not the first one that I wrote, even though it was my most famous. A long time before that, when I was still a senior in high school, I actually wrote a letter to the editor called South Africa Deteriorating. And South Africa Deteriorating was written about the collapse of apartheid and the rise of Nelson Mandela, and the way it was going to lead to the destruction of the nation of South Africa. And that was in 1990 that I wrote that, and it was published in the Russellville Courier newspaper. And it was kind of prescient. It was kind of prophetic. No one really saw it coming at the time. A few of us did, and I did, and I wrote that letter to the editor. And something happened about 2 years ago, actually a little bit less than, about a year and a half ago. My dad passed away. And as I was going through his personal effects, I went down to his house, you know, and I was going through his things and packing things up. And in his office, he had a large metal filing cabinet. And the top drawer of that filing cabinet had my name on it. And so, you know, I was kind of curious. I opened it up, and it was full of a lot of articles I had written, pictures of me, everything from yearbooks to, you know, rally pictures, videotapes, newspaper clippings, a lot of magazine clippings that he had saved over the years of my rallies and protests and demonstrations, and newspaper and magazine articles written about me. And he had kept, not like a shrine, but like an archive of all kinds of source material about his son. It made me kind of really kind of proud but sad at the same time, kind of poignant feeling. But in there, in that filing cabinet drawer with my name on it that my dad had kept, was a framed picture of me from my high school graduation. And in that, in the corner of that, was the clipping of that newspaper letter to the editor called South Africa Deteriorating that I wrote in 1990 and had published. My dad had kept it, you know, all those years from 1990 until 2016. And so that was pretty touching for me. But anyway, you know, a lot of us have known for a long time this was coming. And we have sponsored organizations, things like Hearts Across the Seas to try to bring, you know, white South African girls to marry white nationalist men here in America. We tried to create the Kinsmen Redeemer organization to try to sponsor South African Boer and English immigrants to come here to get a trade, to get sponsored for citizenship, and to get refugee status or at least a green card. And I've always tried to work and help other South African immigrants and refugees. One of my best friends in the National Alliance before I actually went to work for Dr. Pierce was Sam Van Rensburg, who was Dr. Pierce's membership coordinator before me. And he was a South African national and immigrant. So I spent a lot of time talking with Sam and learning about South Africa before I even knew much about Dr. Pierce and the National Alliance. Sam helped recruit me in. And so we've been active trying to help the Boers, you know, whether it's promoting Orania, their attempt to have a white ethnostate there, trying to keep them from going down the same road that Rhodesia went down before it became Zimbabwe, trying to bring women over here from South Africa to mate them with lonely white nationalist guys here, or just trying to make it possible for skilled South Africans to get HB-1B visas or try to learn a trade so that they could. And if nothing else at this point, I really would advise them to just get on a boat, get their money together, sell everything they have that they can, charter a ship, get to these shores and hide out and try to get refugee status. If there's any illegal immigrants that I will support at this point, it's a white South African, whether they're Boer or English, for sure. So now we're looking at, over the last week, the new opposition party in South Africa saying that they're going to literally begin taking away land from white farmers. And whites in South Africa still own 73% of the arable land because they're the only ones who can grow anything on it. Just look at what happened in Rhodesia and Zimbabwe. And these whites in South Africa, you know, now make up about 8% of the South African population, about the same, ironically, percentage they do globally, if you want to think of South Africa as being a microcosm of the whole planet. About 4.5 million white South Africans left. And sure, some of them are liberal and cucked, but a lot of them are not. A lot of them are really in desperate straits now. And as we continue to monitor whether it's going to be a civil war or whether they're going to be genocided, I want to ask all of you to continue to try to keep on task and help our cousins in South Africa as much as possible. I don't know if we'll have to volunteer to go over there and fight for them. I don't know if we'll have to open our hearts and our homes to them. But I do know that we cannot let them die without any witnesses to speak out. So, as the black majority in South Africa begins to try to expropriate lands away from whites without any kind of compensation, and literally saying that they're not ready to kill them yet, as a caveat, but talking about killing the Boer and shooting the farmer, we know that a racial civil war is probably coming in South Africa. And we know it's a precursor, a canary in the coal mine, if you will, for what will happen in Britain in 2066 when whites become a minority there, and here in the United States around 2040, and also in Europe about the same time. If we do nothing, if we're allowed to become disarmed as they want to do, we cannot allow ourselves to be victims, as has happened to the white South Africans. So when you see things like President Donald Trump sitting with Dianne Feinstein, the 84-year-old California Jewess, who's always been a proponent of disarming whites with her assault weapons ban, and now they're trying to make bump stocks illegal, and that you have to be 21 years old to buy guns, and you see these conservatards who are still the Trump train, who fear revolution, who hope to be able to vote their way into just buying a little bit more time, slowing the process of degradation, slowing the entropy until they'll have time to just die off and be gone so their kids can pay the butcher's bill that they've run up. That's what conservatives really want to do. They want to pass the buck down to the next generation and just step off the stage and die peacefully without having to have a war and leave it to their kids and grandkids to be massacred and genocided. That's so gutless and cowardice, I don't even have the words for it. But that's what the supporters of the Trump train are really doing. Putting blind faith, thinking that he's playing 4D chess. He's not even playing checkers. He's not even playing Twiddlywinks. He is a traitor. He always was. And I've told you so. And I've told you that I've told you so so many times that I'm tired of telling you how many times I told you so before the election and since then that Trump is not our guy. He never was. He's a shabbosgoy. He's a stupid, retarded old man who is trying to make everyone happy. And when you actually cringe your base every week like a schizophrenic, really at this point, I hope that Trump is impeached because that would radicalize a few of these normies and he'd be kicked off the fence and get them ready for the fight that's coming. Because otherwise, they'll keep kissing rhino ass until they're just extinct. Trump has never been our guy. He's not our guy now. We're not going to vote our way out of this mess. Boomers, Gen Xers, wake up. I say that as a Gen Xer. Wake up. The solution to our problems is not going to come from the ballot box. It's going to come from the bullet box. Okay? We're going to have a white ethnostate. We're going to have three or four. It's going to be okay. There's going to be a rough patch of road in between now and then. But don't cuck out. Don't stick your head down and keep voting for the lesser of two evils. And then, like some people are doing, I could name some white nationalist leaders. It wouldn't do me any good to name those honorary doctorates who are still on the Trump train, would it? Because then people would be offended that I almost named them. But the reality is, they know as well as I do that Trump was never our guy, and continually making excuses for him, and acting like he's playing some really highball 4D chess, and he knows what he's doing, he's outthinking the antis. No, he's not. He's a flippin' idiot. And he's going to polarize and divide the nation more and more, which is a good thing. Stop being a civic nationalist. Stop being a civic nationalist. Civic nationalism, like the alt-right is trying to push, is the last thing that we need. We're not going to hold this nation together. We're going to tear it apart. And we're going to have white ethnostates in its vacuum. So the alt-right people and the Trump-trained people who are trying to push civic nationalism are becoming our enemies. Because that is what is in the least interest of the white race. What cannot fly must fall. Multiracial democracy cannot fly, and it must fall. And what is falling, we should still push and say, fall faster. Because the sooner it happens, the more territory we will hold on to, the larger our ethnostates will be, the more resources we will keep, and the more of our people we will save from damnation, physical and spiritual. So think about what Trump has done. Is there a wall? No. There's going to be amnesty for DACA. He's completely cut once again on gun control. And whenever I hear a supposedly white nationalist podcast or read on a supposedly white nationalist website or blog defense of Donald Trump and his policies, I just have to think that the only difference between, for example, people in, you know, the TDS, the Daily Stormer, and 1980s Republicans that I remember, with their pushing of civic nationalism, American patriotism, and optics cucking, the only difference between Andrew Anglin and Ronald Reagan right now is that Andrew Anglin is fine with white women being raped, as long as they're raped by white men. And he's also fine with having sex with non-white women, but that's a different story. Literally, those civic nationalists and the Daily Stormer, that's the only difference between them and the rhinos with their civic nationalism. And yeah, they're sellouts, they're collaborators. And I don't care who likes it or not. The reality is, when we have white ethnostates, we're going to remember the collaborators, and the first bullet goes to traitors. The second bullet goes to those collaborators, and we're going to put them up against a wall. And if you don't like it, Don't spend the next 3 or 4 days kvetching and whining and bitching at me in the comment section of my podcast. If you don't like it, find another podcast to listen to. Go listen to Mike Enoch. Go listen to his wife. Go listen to Andrew England. I don't care. Stop listening to the Rope Report if you are a civic nationalist. This is not the place for you. This is the place for purity spiralers. This is the place for the radical flank effect to be in full effect. This is the place where we don't punch right because there's nobody and nothing to our right except the wall. And if you're to our left, that's where you belong. Until next time, this is your loving host, Billy Roper, bringing you unity and peace on the Rope Report, and reminding you as always to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Deutschland! Sieg Heil!
We need our Second Amendment protected.
We have to protect our Second Amendment, which is under siege.
Trump proclaimed in a tweet, I will be meeting with the NRA, who has endorsed me about not allowing people on the terrorist watch list or the no-fly list to buy guns.
But the gun lobby and Trump are in talks over the candidate's call to limit gun sales to people on no-fly list and the terror watch list.
And what happened to the LGBT community? If some of those wonderful people had guns strapped right here, right to their waist or right to their ankle, and this son of a comes out and starts shooting, and one of the people in that room happened to have it and goes boom, boom. You know what? That would have been a beautiful, beautiful sight.
Deutschland, Sieg Heil!
Would have had guns on the good guys in California, if they would have had them in Paris, if they would have had, how about on the military base where five great soldiers, two of them were world-class soldiers, two of them, and one in particular was one of the, I mean, he was a triple A, this guy was one of the greatest soldiers, and they're on the base, and they have a gun-free zone on the base. Whoever heard, you're on a military base, they have a gun-free zone. Now, you know what a gun-free zone is to a sicko? That's bait. That's like gun-free zone. And then they walk in with whatever the hell they're carrying, and these five great soldiers, and I'm telling you, one of them was one of the most highly awarded ones. He was super shot. He's not allowed to have a gun. All five are killed. Instantaneously. And you have other cases. I will get rid of gun-free zones on schools, and you have to. And on military bases, my first day it gets signed, okay? My first day. There's no more gun-free zones. I mean, think of it. A gun-free zone on a military base with some of the best soldiers we have, sitting there, relaxing, watching television, no gun, guy walks in, kills all of them, okay? That ends immediately. We're going back to sanity in this country. We're going back to strength in this country. We're going back to intelligence, and we're going back to common sense. We are going to make America great again. They say, the mastermind of the Paris attack, the mastermind, he's a slob. He probably has about a 70 IQ. He's a dope. And you know what? Dope. I saw him with a white hat that was filthy dirty. The press is calling him a mastermind.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fire outside to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're set a wedding full of clowns.
I won't kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.